You are tuned into Impact, the show about people making an impact in the community. This is your new host, Mark Hall, for WHFR. And I'm joined today by some gentlemen who have already made impacts for their community out and about in the world and have now returned to continue making an impact here at home. They are veterans and they seek to make their impact for fellow veterans right here with a group called Team RWB, Red, White, and Blue.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Gentlemen, if you'd introduce yourselves, please.
My name is Ira Brownridge Jr. I am actually a former specialist / corporal in the Army National Guard. I did two deployments, one to Bosnia in 97, and then I also did my Iraq tour in 2006 to 2007, and then I was retired out due to injury in 2008.
Shane Campos, just recently retired with 21 years in the military. Served two overseas tours to South Korea, twice to Iraq, and once to Afghanistan. Majority of my time was spent at the Army at Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Yep, and my name is Ryan Taylor. I was in the Marines from 2002 to 2006. One tour in Iraq. The rest of the time was spent overseas in Japan.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for your service. And on behalf of a lot of people, I want to thank you for continuing your service here at home. Team RWB, exactly what is that and what do you do here?
So Team RWB is, Team Red, White, and Blue, and it's a veteran service organization, and its goal is to enrich the lives of America's veterans by connecting them to their community through social and physical activity. And the great thing about this group is it actually started here in the Metro Detroit area in 2010. And now there's over 100 chapters across the region, over 120,000 members. And one of the best things about it is it's all inclusive. So anyone can join. It's about bringing veterans together with the community members and family and friends. And it's all different types of ways to get involved, all sorts of different activities and events, to running and walk groups, to coffee, potlucks, baseball games, you name it, we do it. And the best way to find us is simply to go to teamrdb.org, and you can see a little drop down arrow, and you can find the local chapter in your area, and you can actually see what events are actually going on just by right there. It's pretty easy.
Now, I'm fortunate that two of you gentlemen are captains. Yes. In the organization.
Yes.
Ira, you're Detroit captain?
Ann Arbor's chapter captain.
Ann Arbor.
Yes, actually Ryan was the chapter captain first, and then he passed the baton to me.
Right.
Ann Arbor in August. So.
And Shane?
I just recently taken over here in Detroit, and looking forward to making an impact in Detroit. So all things Detroit, Metro Detroit area, we like to have a good time. I like to say we sell smiles.
Now, how did you guys find out about this group?
I'm sorry, Ira, go ahead.
Okay, well, when I first came back to Michigan, the seamless transition at the Ann Arbor VA, they was telling me about a group that they was just starting, with, that wanted to partner veterans and civilians together. And this is about 2009-ish, 2010 area. So that's how I got involved, way before we even had chapters. And I was like, oh, okay, sure, whatever. So I signed up, and they haven't got rid of me yet.
You're here for the long run.
Yes, I really believe exactly what Team RWB is about. I feel like a lot of it actually really related to me in a way I didn't even notice until years down the road, where I'm like, you know what? I'm glad I did this, because I wouldn't have ever had a clue. Like I said, I wouldn't have been able to engage in my community without, knowing that there's people, that civilians, that they don't understand our plight, but they want to help and they want to be partners with us. So it's not like who's better, who's more important. It's just we're all equal, and that's what I really needed, and that's what Team RWB gave me.
You ever find that discomfort in people thinking they either owe you something or that there's a certain hero complex and you just want to work with them in some way?
For me, like the hero complex, most of the people that I've always, I associated, especially those that actually seem the worst of worst, say we kind of don't really want people to know. We don't really want to share our stories. We don't want to share our experiences. So it's like I said, one of the things that we really had a hard time with the number of like suicides going up, because we don't want to share that with anybody. We don't want people to know our pain, and we also want to be strong and get through it. That's my personal take on it. So I feel like I don't think I've ever really came into it because I kept myself more isolated, unless I'm around family, you know, friends, veterans. That's the only people that really would probably even know what I went through. It was very hard for me to really share like what I've been through with some total strangers. Even when I was going through like mental health through the hardest part, my hardest days, I didn't really want to share it. I mean, I'd sit there and just be like, okay, I'm here. I said, I'll come. I'll leave. That was basically the beginning of where I realized that I needed help and I needed to, you know, find a better outlet to get through like the tough days, the hard days.
And with fellow veterans, there was an ability to talk through things?
Yeah, because for the most part, most veterans, they had an understanding of what we've gone through. When you have veterans that understand or those that know that they're going to have to go through it, you want to let the people before they get like, I'm about to go overseas, you want to let them know, hey, this is, you want to share that information regardless of what branch you're in. You always want to share your information to those that don't know what they're going into, so they have like a heads up of what to expect.
So you're working with a lot of active duty people.
We have, but for us, like I said, we got civilians, active duty people. We have retired people. We have some that just came out. So that's the beauty. Like I said, that's one of the things I love about Team RWB, and I think it makes it strong because of. Yeah. It's got all sides, basically.
Everybody.
Yep.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with Ira, and his story resonates with me because I find that being in the military, I always say that the military is the best people at brainwashing, you know, because you're just all in this same little cage, and you don't realize anything's different until you get out, you know. But me personally, I was stationed at Fort Campbell. I was there with my daughter. I was in my room every day, looking back, suffering through PTSD, depression, and I have a sleep disorder. So just hermitizing myself in my home, and being a geographical bachelor, my family was up here in Detroit. I was at Fort Campbell, and so there was no reason, there was no motivation to leave my house. There was absolutely, and I was just fine with that. Let me be clear, you know. But when I had my daughter on the weekends or whatnot, we, you know, RWB was there, and you know, I was like, well, let me get her, and we'll go have her hang out with some friends, you know. So next thing you know, I'm out there hanging out with some friends with my daughter, and she's getting to meet some friends, and I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then, you know, here's Tuesday, and they have a soup kitchen. Let's go clean some dishes. So I'm like, I can clean some dishes. That's cool. So I'll get out of my house, go clean some dishes. Wednesday, it's game night with the veterans. So let's go to the old folks' home, veterans, and play some dominoes. And Thursday was a run, and Friday was coffee with the veterans at the old folks' home. And I look back, and I'm like, hell, how the hell did I get out of my house the whole entire week? You know, I say, what are y'all guys doing? But I will tell you that just having those all-inclusive people there who just genuinely care about you, no matter what your background is, no matter who you are, it's just a phenomenal experience that you can't really put into words. And I have, me being a very very similar to Ira's experience, a lot of us are just kind of closed off, you know. We kind of stick to our brotherhood, if you will, and we don't really engage a lot unless we know you. But I will tell you that RWB is family. That's the best way I can put it.
And the selflessness really gave you a chance to make new family.
Absolutely. I think it gave me an opportunity to bring that camaraderie that I had with me in the military and that experience I had and those skill sets I had to share those skill sets, that camaraderie, and that passion I have for helping my fellow man and woman in the civilian world, and especially here in Detroit for me personally.
Well, welcome to Detroit. We're so Absolutely. Glad you came.
I'm glad I'm here.
Especially since you started out originally from Houston, did you say?
Yeah, I'm originally from Houston. You know, I grew up in the inner city of Houston, 4th Ward. And, so I definitely resonate with that inner city plight. And I resonate with that Texas pride. No matter where you're from, you're still a Texan kind of concept. And Detroit, one thing I love about Detroit, no matter where you're at, Detroit hustles harder. You know what I mean? And they have that pride. I was going down one of the rundown neighborhoods with my wife, and right there written on the fence in nice, beautiful graffiti, "Go Tigers!" You know what I mean? So that really resonated with me. No matter what kind of situation Detroit finds itself in, their pride is unstoppable, untouchable, and that really resonates with me, and that's what I love about it. So I've definitely taken Detroit on as home for me and a special place in my heart for sure.
Like I said, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Ryan, this started for me through our own program director here at WHFR, Chelsea Tharp, and you go back as good friends, mm-hmm. family almost, and she was supportive, rooting for you when you were away in the service, and now you're back and you're doing your thing. Started out formally as the Ann Arbor chapter captain, mm-hmm. and now you're not an Eagle Scout, but an Eagle...
Yeah, so they call it like a Eagle Leader Fellow. So basically, you know, for all of 2018, I'm helping out, we're broken down into regions. So the Midwest region, which is about 43 chapters across five different states, helping out with different programs and assisting the actual employees. Because out of this whole organization, there's only about a dozen or so full-time employees. It's a completely volunteer-driven organization. The three of us here today are all volunteers. You know, we all have, you know, jobs and lives outside of this, but this is something that we truly believe in, you know, and it's like kind of what drives us, you know, every day. And, you know, kind of how I got started was on a random bike ride, you know, a road bike going down the side of the road, and a guy passed me, and he had a Navy tattoo, and I shouted "Go Navy" at him, even though I was in the Marines. And he slowed down a little bit, and I caught up, and we started talking, and he invited me out to this RWB thing, and I was like, you know, I've heard of that stuff before, you know, I'm good, but thanks, appreciate it. And we kept on riding down the road together, and come to find out, we lived like a block apart. You know, we're 15 miles away, like in Ann Arbor, like both on our road bikes. And so, you know, he invited me out a couple more times, and he found out where I lived, and I couldn't really say no. So I finally came out, and it, you know, that first time when I saw like a Team RWB event, you know, really like it changed my life, and it was there for me in a really like dark, hard time of my life, the hardest thing I ever had to go through. Team RWB was there for me, and it's just been huge. You know, it definitely it becomes more than just like the team. The people that show up and that, you know, we call each other Eagles, they really do become like family, and it's kind of hard to describe, you know, what we do call like building like relationships, you know. And you show up the first day and you don't really know anyone, but that changes really quickly, you know. And the hardest event to come to is the first one, you know, but once people do, you can see like how like warm and embracing and like how like fun the people are and how diverse it is, from Vietnam vets to post 9/11 to people going through ROTC currently at Michigan or Wayne State, and how diverse all the events are, you know. So we'll always try and be as inclusive as possible, so we have as many different events. So no matter what if you want to run a triathlon or get a cup of coffee, like we're going to have an event that, you know, that is suitable for everyone.
All right. I've looked through some of your information, and you guys talk about these engaging members in meaningful team and community-based. Oh, okay. This is the one that I just kind of moved me. This young lady wrote, "The Team RWB has literally saved my life. I've struggled with depression at times and went to a very dark place where I didn't think I was going to climb out of. Team RWB reached out to me. They grabbed my hands and helped pull me out of the pit. Without my Team RWB family, I don't believe I would be here today. I will forever be grateful for Team RWB." You know, you read about people dealing with depression and you hear about suicides, and you turn, when I was doing my original read up or recon into was RWB, there was all these things about events and having fun and getting together, and it didn't seem like there was a lot of talk about counseling, but as you read further, these people seem like their counseling was all the fun and the camaraderie.
Absolutely.
And the being together.
Being present.
It was like, we don't need to talk about counseling or suicide prevention if we're just being together. If we're just with one another living, then if you're alive and you're present and we're with one another, it seems to take care of itself.
Yeah, I don't know if it exactly takes care of itself, but there's a huge correlation between getting out, getting active, even if it's just getting active by getting in your car and showing up on a Saturday morning at a park in Ann Arbor where sometimes we have a cup of coffee together,
right.
Sit down a park bench. Like, just that human connection and interaction can be, like, so fulfilling. You know, and just start your day off like on the right foot. And we have plenty of contacts with resources where people can get that next level. A lot of times, you know, it's just it just wonders just meeting like positive people and having so many positive influences in your life with the, you know, the events and the people, and the people are there for you. Like, it really is.
Yeah.
And it's pretty powerful.
I like to say it's like Facebook, but in real life. You know what I mean?
And and the difference between this digital not being there
absolutely
versus
it is night and day, right? So it's one thing to get a happy birthday message on Facebook because you were reminded, versus, hey, after the run, we're going to have a social. Oh, and by the way, your gang of friends here are going to get you a little surprise cupcake coming around the corner that you don't know about and sing you happy birthday in real life. You know what I mean? And so that person who real life story, active duty, you know, he was suffering from an injury, but he still came out for the social and enjoyed himself. And, you know, he was a little bit embarrassed about the birthday cake, but it's just... How special is that? That a group of people can come together, who aren't necessarily family, who you don't work with, and can just embrace you for being another human being on planet Earth, and just appreciate you for you. You know,
and that expectation coming out of the service, when you were expected to muster and fall in, and be accounted, and
yeah, be part of that group.
Right. There's that something to it. That
it's a like camaraderie, you know, and a lot of times you don't really know how much you miss it, you know, until like you get it again. And like, this group definitely gives you that camaraderie, you know, like, even though we're all different branches and different experiences, like, we all have a story, and that's something that we always talk about in RWB. And we actually have like weekend getaways where people can actually learn how to get their story out or put pen to the paper and teach you your own personal leadership development skills. And but we can all come together like as one. Doesn't matter if you served or didn't serve. You know, but, you know, we're all standing there together, and that's why we always wear the same shirts and hoodies and gear, and it's just one big family.
Tell me a bit more about having people who didn't serve and the value of having friends and family belong in the chapters, in the teams.
Well, I think one of the first things is bring out is the fact that sometimes, like, spouses or significant others, you know, someone who someone's dating, they never, you know, they kind of won't feel they're part of it because we're a veteran service organization. They feel, well, I'm no veteran. But then, like I said, when you explain to them this is for everyone, it allows them to also know that, say, if there's a person who's serving decides to go overseas, it actually helps them when that, in that case, they'll feel like, you know, they're part of someone that, while, like, Michigan is pretty much a National Guard state. So imagine when you have someone that's going over to Afghanistan, we have called FRG, the Family Readiness Group, and I think that's kind of what Team RWB also offers, where you have that group of people that you may not want to be just around military, but you want to be around civilians. So by offering the chance to not only interact with veterans, I think it helps us build the community better. It's not who's going to do more, veterans or civilians. It's us building a community together, and I think it comes back to camaraderie and just being a team. Yeah, being a team.
Yeah, I think the huge advantage to Red, White, and Blue is the integration of family, who it adds to the support of the veteran, and the civilian community, who adds to the support of the veteran, and bridging that gap. So you have this veterans community who I can just reach out to my brother left and right, and we're one team. We can pick up exactly where we left off, and we speak the same lingo. We have the same language. We share the same humor most of the time, and it's a great time. So when I run into maybe some civilian counterparts, there's this small space, this gap, and I think it's on both sides. So for them, it's like, is this scary veteran? What did you go through? Did you kill anybody? What is it like? What are you suffering? Are you broken? And all these maybe misnomers or ideas that's kind of floating around in their brain, because if they've never met a veteran, they don't know what they don't know. And for us, like I said earlier, we're kind of brainwashed into what our cage looks like to our left and right. And so we get out into the civilian world, and we have this mentality of go, 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 go. And then you realize there's this just whole different dynamic of nuances, and not everybody does what they're told, and not everybody does exactly what you want them to do, when you want them to do it, how you want them to do it. So you realize that you have to use words and nice words and a huge different dynamics, and understanding this new space you're in, if you will. And I think RWB does a great job of bringing down those barriers, those walls, those perceptions, and at the end of the day, kind of brings us down to just human beings, and hey, you're cool, I'm cool, and let's just have a good time together. And I think that is what's fundamentally great about RWB and helps build that tribe. And I've met at this Eagle Leaders Academy. I'll be honest, I definitely went there. And this one is, I want to identify that Eagle Leaders Academy is a professional development course that RWB has established for their leaders, which, you know, it's not just hang out. It's you have an opportunity to be developed, which is huge. So I go to this course, and not to be egotistical, but you just have this thing. I'm like, okay, I've been in the military 21 years. I'm retired. I'm W-4. I'm hua, hua, hua. And you guys are just civilians. You know what I mean? And just like Ira said, everybody has their story. And after listening to these civilians tell their stories and listen to the passion that they have for helping their fellow veterans, and the time, effort, and energy that they have put into RWB, and they themselves have never served, was absolutely breathtaking, right? And it took me down a couple notches where I absolutely needed to be, and to see that it is absolutely Team Red, White, and Blue, right? And so when I look at my fellow members who are civilians, who have never served, I have a newfound respect for them, for how much time, effort, and energy that they selflessly put in into a veteran service organization. No knock to these other great organizations like the VFW, American Legion, or things like that, but if you don't have the requirements to join their club, you don't get to join, right? But RWB, we're all family. So that's my take on the civilian veteran space there, and why I think it's so valuable.
Let me clarify for people who are tuning in or have this question. You don't have to be related to a veteran. If you're a civilian, you don't have to be related to a veteran to join Team RWB. You can join because you want to contribute as a civilian. You can just seek out
absolutely
Team Detroit, Team RWB Detroit, Team RWB Ann Arbor, and say, hey, I'd like to contribute. I never joined, I never enlisted, I was never commissioned. I'm a civilian, I've always been a civilian, but I'd like to be a member and do this.
In. Yeah, and just it's another thing to top off on that point is, one of the beauty things is with Team Red, White, and Blue is we also understand that you also have your regular life. You have your job, you have school. So there's no minimum times you got to show up. You show up when you can. If you can only make it once a month, as long as you can make it once a month, because we understand that you do have a life, you do have a career, you do have other things. So it's not just we got to be your whole life, but you know, let's help build this community together.
So give what you have
when you can,
whatever your background was, is you are a team looking for people who have something to contribute or willing to contribute
or just show up, right? Mm-hmm. So for the, yeah. I think that there might be a misnomer, misunderstanding, or perception, right? I want to make sure I break down this barrier. For Team RWB Detroit, if you go on our website and you find something that you want to do, whether it's yoga, a ruck, coffee, bowling, painting, and you've never been out before, great. Come on out, enjoy yourself, and you'll be welcome, arms wide open. If yoga is the only thing you like to do, only do yoga. If you show up, let's say yoga is every other month, once a month, every other weekend, and you only show up once every other month, that's cool. We will accept you arms wide open. So there are some people who feel like, well, if I don't fully commit or this or that, and I just want to get rid of that, right? So at the end of the day, when you show up, you are welcome, right? And like Ira and Ryan, I haven't seen these guys in months, but we pick right up like just we saw each other yesterday. And that's exactly how RWB is, your family. And that's the point I want to get across to everyone, is a lot of people are kind of nervous to show up and do they fit in? The answer is yes, you do fit in. Mm-hmm. Yes, you are welcome. And when I don't see you for 2 months and you come back, we still love you and you're still part of our family.
Well, let's make this invitation very clear. What's the website?
Our website is www.teamrwb.org. And like I said, it's free to join. You just put in your name, information. Like I said, if you're in Michigan, you got at least 9 chapters in Michigan. Or right now in the UP, in a Lower Peninsula. And like I said, you the funny thing is, say if you, for instance, if you live in Detroit, but you work in Ann Arbor, you feel like you can do more things in Ann Arbor, you can be part of any number of chapters. There's, like I said, just because you're an Ann Arbor chapter member doesn't mean you can't go and do other events, other places. So that's the best thing about Team RWB is, regardless of where you go, there's probably going to be a chapter by you, and they're going to open you with open arms, even though they never met you.
Yep. I can go down to Houston tomorrow and join their event.
I was just thinking as you were talking, it sounds like arms wide open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that I think drew all us into it, because it didn't come, it's one of the things, we are not trying to be in competition with any other service organization. We prefer to work with them, and the same thing with all other VSOs. They believe in working with other areas, because you're not going to get to everyone, so why not work as a team? So that's like in April when we have our Run as One, we have Team Rubicon and Team Michigan Continues. It's about working together to help the same simple cause. And I think by having that kind of a partnership, really, I think it benefits not only the veteran, but it does help the community, because the community, now they see that we're not in competition. So then you have community organizations like running groups and stuff like that. That's like, hey, you know what? Let's get on. Let's be partners with them. And you like I said, you just build a family and it gets bigger and bigger. And you also build in a community. So like I said, it gets to the point where you're not going, oh, I don't know if he knows me or not. You find that you got something in common. The labels go away.
And the other great thing is, when you go to sign up for all these chapters, or just to sign up in general, it's real easy. And the only difference is the veterans get a free, you know, dry fit T-shirt when they sign up, and the non-veteran members don't. But that's about it, you know. But you look it up, and I travel for work, and anytime I go somewhere, I'm looking up the local chapter, and there's always an email address, so, you know, or look them up on, you know, Facebook, and people are always going to respond and invite you out. And maybe if you just need a cup of coffee, or you'd rather, you know, go
go meet up, send an email out to the point of contact that's listed, and they'll definitely go meet you somewhere and take you out and kind of introduce you to Team RWB from there. You know, but it's definitely all over the place, and you remember one, you remember to all of them in between Detroit and Ann Arbor. I mean, those are just the titles, but we cover all of Metro Detroit. I mean, we have events all the way up to Oakland County. There's a chapter in Tecumseh, and no matter where you live, there's going to be something that, you know, we encourage you to come out to and have fun. And we always ask our members too, if there's something that you want to do that you don't see on our calendar, like, let us know, like, let's do it.
Absolutely.
You know, we're all volunteers, you know, there's tons of volunteers in the state, you know, between all the chapters, and like, we're trying to be as inclusive and as, you know, diverse as possible. So, like, let's do it. So, a lot of times we ask our members, you know, what do you guys want to do? And
yeah,
one of the things that was brought up was ice skating and, like, a pizza party. So, you know, we're going to do that, you know, later this month, and looking forward to it and see how that goes.
Yeah, we got rock climbing coming up. You know, it was just brought up the other day. And my answer is yes, you know. So, I want to make sure that the members know that, or the audience knows that. If you are an underwater basket weaving specialist, and you want to put that on, by all means, let us know, and we'll make it happen, right? So if you have a particular niche that you think would serve our audience, by all means, we're willing to try it and put it on, and it's not my chapter, it's not it's our chapter, right? It's our community. So I'm merely, as a chapter captain, facilitate these events and these experiences, but it is certainly not mine. It is absolutely ours. Mm-hmm.
This is why I want to thank you for being my first guest on Impact, the show about people making an impact in their community. This is Team Red, White, and Blue, whose website, again,
www.teamrwb.org.
Also to be found on Facebook, the other usual social media connections.
Instagram and Twitter, and it's not hard to find. You know, anywhere you're at, you know, just search Team RWB Ann Arbor, Team RWB Detroit for on the Facebook, and all those links too are from the teamrwb.org. Like, you don't have to be a part of Facebook to find us and to see what events we're having.
But by all means, look them up, because pretty soon you're going to be finding me a member. This means too much, and I'm too grateful and appreciative. Gentlemen, once again, please introduce yourselves for the audience.
Yeah, I'm Ivor Brownridge Jr. Like I said, I was a specialist corporal in the Army National Guard.
With Team RWB Ann Arbor?
Oh, as Team RWB, I am a chapter captain for Ann Arbor.
Thank you, sir.
Shane Campos, chapter captain for Team RWB Detroit.
And I'm Ryan Taylor, the Team RWB 2018 Midwest Eagle Leader Fellow.
Thank you for tuning in to Impact with Team Red, White, and Blue. Again, gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for the invite.
So in this half of Impact, we're here with A. Faith Larkins. Faith is a founder of Kingdom Faith Service, LLC, a company devoted to kingdom advancement through security and mentoring services. She's the founder of I Am a Woman of Faith Ministry, an organization dedicated to leaving a legacy of faith for the generations. Faith has a Master's of Divinity degree, Ashland Theological Seminary, and a Bachelor's degree in Criminal Justice. Faith applied her Criminal Justice degree to the law enforcement arena, having worked for the Wayne County Sheriff's Department and also with the Michigan State Police Department. She has worked as a road patrol trooper, a uniformed sergeant, and a detective sergeant before retiring in 2016. A published author, having submitted her testimony, Suicide is Not an Option, in an anthology entitled It's Possible, Living Beyond Limitations. She's also an inspirational speaker, active on several media sites, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. She has her own website, IamAWomanOfFaith.net. Faith, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Security as well as mentoring. Few people can say that, but you definitely have the security background in check.
I do. It wasn't something that I really wanted to do either.
But you made that leap.
I responded to a call, a request. I was at my previous church. Didn't have a security team, didn't have any kind of security in place. And with the influx of people coming into the church and doing things they have no business, assaulting pastors, things of that nature, assaulting congregants, all of that kind of stuff, to not have a security team in place wasn't wise. So when my pastor found out where I worked, he asked me to put together a security team, and so I did. So I put together the team. They didn't have cameras in place. I set all that up, got the team together where it was working and discerning and watching and being active. And we never had any real incidents at the church either. So it's needed. It's needed in the church environment, sadly.
I think some people prey upon good people because they know they are not in a mind to be wary. They're looking to them to be lambs, sheep.
Vulnerable. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And all the more reason to have a security team in your church. All the more reason to have that. Because once they see that there is security there, they're likely not to do anything. You know, there was a time when you didn't need security in the church, but times have changed.
And they have.
Times have changed drastically, and the enemy is emboldened now to walk through the church doors. And it's specifically because of the vulnerability that they perceive are in the church houses. But when you have a security team out there and it kind of meets you at the front door, chances are that would be predator, that would be perpetrator is not going to do anything. And specifically in that, in the church environment where we were at, there's a level of discernment that you have to have, because I look at things as all things spiritual, right? So if a person is coming in, there's some kind of, there's, and they have a mind to do something that is wrong. That's a spirit thing. You know, sometimes that's a spirit thing. You know, that's that demonic spirit coming into the house of the Lord, because there's got to be something wrong if you're coming into the house of the Lord to do something like that. So there's something wrong with you. So there's a level of discernment that I tried to teach that security team how to activate, how to be aware of, how to watch people. And some of that, part of it was spiritual. The other part was from my law enforcement background, because being a cop for over 27 years, you are weary of people, and you can kind of see who's going to do wrong and who's not, who's going to fight you, who's not. And you kind of develop that kind of discernment, while doing law enforcement. You really can't help it. And so I kind of brought that into the church environment, whether that's good or bad, because I was looking at everybody a little suspiciously, a little suspect, you know, with a little bit of side eye, you know. But I tried to share with them how to observe people and not to put people on, you don't want to put them off, those people that are not doing anything wrong is what I'm saying. You don't want to make them feel uneasy because you're giving them the side eye. You know what I mean? They're there to worship. So being on the security team at that church, your presence was known. You were standing there, but you weren't like up in somebody's face making them feel uncomfortable, because perhaps your discernment is off and that person was just there just off the street and just needed to come into the church. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to the person that's coming in there trying to do some harm to somebody.
You are both somebody with a divinity degree, a master's in divinity. Your bachelor's was in criminal justice.
Yeah.
So many law enforcement seek the criminal justice background, mm-hmm. as opposed to the more socially inclined degrees?
Like?
You see, I don't even know which one I should be looking at in particular. But in getting a criminal justice degree, you know how to pursue things through the criminal justice system. You know how to prosecute and see your way through efficiently. Mm-hmm. And a good number of people have wondered, would we see a different law enforcement system where more officers of a social justice mindset? And I ask this of you, not in a finger-pointing manner, because I happen to know that you, Faith, are a person who has questioned the system, quotes on both ends of that. Mm-hmm. As such, I'm inclined to ask you your thoughts on your former colleagues and their tendencies.
Ooh, let's get to it. Come on now.
Well, I'm not asking you to be vindictive, nothing. I'm just, do you think there is a mindset that might be served by a realigning of priorities?
Well, if I understand what you're saying, you're asking if criminal justice schooling is impactful on what the present climate of law enforcement today. Is that in the vein? My criminal justice schooling has little or no bearing on how I pursued law enforcement, or how I interact in a law enforcement capacity. Now, what might affect that is the training you receive from the academy. My college training really didn't have it. My college training did nothing more than lay the foundation for me and understanding for me about what criminal justice was, what the criminal justice system did. When I went into the training, I went through two academies. I went through an academy in 1989, and I was one of two Black females. There were probably maybe 20 Black men, maybe, I think I'm being generous, maybe 20 Black men, and the rest were Caucasian, mostly Caucasian men and, you know, women. The first academy was similar to, it's a paramilitary environment, number one. And the first academy was, they did a little bit of hazing. It was a whole lot of in your face kind of stuff. In comparison, the second academy was the quote unquote kinder, gentler academy. So they did a whole lot less of that hazing kind of thing. So I said that to say, that first academy, with all the hazing and getting in your face and you got to be tough and you got to be this and you got to be that, was their way of preparing you for what you were going to encounter on the road. Likewise, the 108th, with the climate changing, and them going to a kinder, gentler academy, they wanted you to have a little bit more of a verbal, you know, they didn't, you know, it wasn't all this. They didn't want you to be as aggressive, is what I took from it. Now, whether or not that has anything to do with how you approach law enforcement, I think a lot of that has to do with your background. What I saw was, for me, I'm the kind of person, I'm going to treat you the way you treat me. If you have a little bit of an attitude, I might have a little bit of an attitude too. I might be a little less inclined to give you a break. Where normally I would give a lot of breaks on the road. I didn't write everybody. There are those that come from different areas, have little to, they're brought into the Detroit area, an urban area, and they have had little experience dealing with another race. And so when they go out and do law enforcement, they have this cowboy mentality where I'm going to take charge of this thing, and I'm going to, you know, treat you any kind of way. But in Detroit, it's really different, because you're going to find a whole lot more people giving you flack for that kind of treatment. They're not accepting of that kind of treatment. So you really can't, you really shouldn't do that. I think a lot of the long of the short of it is, I think a lot of how people approach law enforcement has a whole lot more to do with their background and what they believe appear in their head than necessarily the training that they got in college. I think that the training that they might have gotten in the academy stimulated what they already believed.
You know, a lot of people are of the mindset that the military brainwashes people. And in a lot of talks that I've had with civilians and fellow military, I've gotten a lot of civilians to recognize that I never thought the military brainwashed me anyway. It was maybe in some ways brought out aspects that were already there. But this notion of brainwashing is an overwrought narrative. And so I guess what I'm getting at is when I hear about the police department bringing out these aspects in people, yeah, some of them may probably already had it in them. And you know, as far as you going into returning to college, rather, for your master's in divinity, your spiritualism was something that was always a part of you, yes?
Yes. Yeah.
So you're seeking to find common ground with people. Some people seek law enforcement not to become...
They want a lord over somebody. Go ahead and say it. They want a lord. Listen, I'm about keeping it 100%. Some people go into law enforcement because it gives them a level of authority that they didn't have ever in their life. And then they therefore come into this organization, put this uniform on, and they abuse their authority, plain and simple.
And then there are others who sincerely want to help.
Absolutely.
People.
And the ones that abuse their authority make it bad for every other good cop that's out there, because now every law enforcement officer is looked at suspect by the public because of what a few rogue police officers do. And it's unfair, but it happens all the time. But I think you have to have a level of maturity when you go into any career, but specifically in careers where you already have a level of authority over them. You have to be mature in your authority, because if you're immature in your authority, you're going to abuse that authority. You're going to overuse it. You know, you're going to leave a bad taste in the public's mouth. And that's really not what law enforcement is supposed to be about. Law enforcement is certainly enforcing the laws, but it's also a service to the public. And you can't be a service to the public when you're trying to lord over them because of your own low self-esteem. And now you got this uniform on and you missed a tough guy. So, I've seen it happen too many times in law enforcement where they've come and they've had that kind of mentality, and specifically in the Detroit area. I did most of my career in the Detroit area, and I've seen them challenged on it. I've seen the public challenge that particular officer on it, and then it ends up being a fight, and it doesn't have to be. You know what I'm saying? The only thing that another person wants is for you to treat them respectfully. I've arrested felons and had no problem.
I've heard that a lot of times a woman police officer can enter a position, can enter a situation and defuse it because she knows she cannot use that upper body strength and get combative with a perpetrator, and therefore she must use wisdom and intelligence where another officer who happens to be male would flex.
I kind of disagree with you on that. Obviously, it's not a test of testosterone, and that's what it usually is when it's a mano, when it's man on man, it's a test of testosterone. Who's the bigger, badder guy? No, we don't have that kind of thing going on. I think women are wiser anyway. So that being said.
You can't see me right now, but I'm throwing my hands up in agreement.
So that being said, I think that, and it may be in the back of our mind that, you know, I don't want to get into some tussling match with somebody because I am female. But at the same time, it's got to be, you also got to be like, I'm not afraid to tussle just because I'm female either. You know, I mean, I've had situations where the guy just don't care if you're male or female. I had to fight a guy in a store by myself. And I had to do what I needed to do to come out of that alive because his intention was, I found out afterwards, after we got him all handcuffed and everything. I had called for backup and got him all handcuffed and stuff. He said he was trying to knock me down to the ground. And if he had got me down to the ground, he's going to take my gun and shoot me in the head. That's what he said. So some folks don't care if you're male or female. So if you're female, you still have to be able to protect yourself. You still have to take measures in case you run up against one of those nuts that just don't care if you're female and just see, they don't see female, they see cop. So I think it's a misnomer to think that because you're female, you're not going to get into any tussle or you're not going to be challenged, even if you are using your verbiage on them. Some folks just don't care. They just see cop.
So from that background, you take your experiences, you take your passion and your love for humanity, and you take off a uniform.
Oh, Jesus, yes. Yeah, that was, you know, that was a long time coming. Years ago, God had told me that I was going to step out by faith. So I had always known in the back of my mind that I wasn't going to retire with 25 years from the state police. I didn't know how I was leaving, but I knew that because God had already told me, you're going to be stepping out by faith. And so I had just recently transferred back to the Detroit area from Brighton. I went to Brighton kind of to get away from the stigmata of being in Detroit and just that mindset of management in Detroit. It was difficult to work under. And so I went to Brighton and found it refreshing, stayed there for a little while, came back to the Detroit area. No sooner than I got back, it was a microscopic examination of everything that I did. If I omitted one or two things, I was called on the carpet. Now, mind you, I'm fifth in seniority as a sergeant at that location, the only female. And I got zeroed in, you know, two white lieutenants. One in particular didn't like me for whatever reason. I have no idea why he didn't like me. He didn't even really know me. But everything that I did was an issue. He was always watching, you know, looking around corners, trying to catch me doing stuff. Another one that was in charge there, he was right along. He would dress me down in the hallway in front of my troopers, that kind of stuff. And so it got to be, and I've dealt with this kind of treatment all during my career with the state police. But it got to the point where it just was too much. It just became too much. And I had already been to the point where I'd had to talk myself into going to work every morning. Every morning I had to give myself a pep talk. Go on in. Half the battle is you just getting there. Just go on in there. Just go to work. Just, you know, and I would, every morning I would do this. And so I had gone off on vacation, and in the month of March of 2016, and I think I was off for, it's my birthday month, so I think I was off pretty much the entire month. I came back the first weekend in April. I came back, and that Friday I get to work. I get in my patrol car. I shoot out to Belle Isle, because we have a patrol out at Belle Isle, and I go out there, take all my work and stuff to do there, and I'm sitting there, nothing. I can do nothing. I can't do anything. I don't have a mind to do anything, nothing. And I stayed on top of my stuff, because I knew if I didn't, they would be on top of me. So I stayed on top of my stuff. And then I also helped the other sergeants try to stay on top of their stuff so they wouldn't bother them either. But that Friday, nothing. Couldn't do anything. So I make it through Friday. Saturday comes. Same thing. And we were working 12-hour shifts. I mean to tell you, I sat in that car for 12 hours and could not bring myself to do my work. And then Sunday morning, I got up and I tried to talk myself into going to work. And I felt this physical manifestation of everything shutting down. It just felt like the dam broke. And I couldn't do it. I could not do it. I could not make myself go. And I just broke down, and I just couldn't do it. And so I called in sick, and I realized that day, I said, something's not right. And so I went and spoke to my doctor, and I told him about it. And when I was in his office, I just broke down in tears. And this is after the microscopic examination was every day at work, practically. Them looking for reasons to write me up, them looking for reasons to investigate me, any little thing that I did, going through my trooper's case files to make sure that I did my monthly reviews on every single one. And if I missed one, it was a problem. Getting called into the office for simple stuff. You know, every day it was something like that. And so that Sunday, I just couldn't do it. And so I called my doctor, and I made an appointment, and I sat in his office, and I just broke down. Broke down sobbing. And he was like, I'm going to take you off work. I'm going to put you on medical leave.
Faith, you are published with Suicide is Not an Option in the anthology, It's Not Possible.
It's possible. Living Beyond Limitations.
Thank you. You're an inspirational speaker.
Indeed.
And people looking for you to either speak your truth or to consult, be it on matters of faith or security, can reach you where?
Oh, man, they can reach me. Probably the best way to reach me is via email. And you can reach me at kingdomfaithservices075@gmail.com or iamawomanoffaith01@gmail.com. You can also inbox me at Faith Larkins on Facebook. You can hit me up on Instagram. I am a woman of faith, all lowercase letters, and the, call that little thing, not a hyphen,
underscore
between each word, or Twitter, Faithful Woman and the number one. I also have a website, www.imawomanoffaith.net.
Imawomanoffaith.net. A woman of a strong story.
Mm-hmm.
A woman of a strong testimony. And glad to have here.
Oh, thank
you. On Impact.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio. Featuring local and independent artists.
Guys and dolls, you are at the Malt Shop with Daddy G here in WHFR. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the Malt Shop. What a jukebox is playing, and the kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hon. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. When the clock strikes 2, 3, and 4. Save.